I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and inspiration to help you start, manage, and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. This is episode 231. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Griff.
How's things?
So good. Back in the studio. I love being in the studio. Who's our guest this week?
Well, this week we'll hear part two of my interview with eBay's Valerie Yee and eBay seller Ashley Mulder as they continue to debunk listing myths. And we have some seller questions to address. Some of them are pretty interesting. That's later, of course. But in the meantime, I see there is no eBay news this week, Brian.
Correct. No eBay news this week. But in lieu of a news report, I thought maybe I could give you a quick little update on my visit to a seller meeting in Akron, Ohio last week.
That's an excellent idea. So how did it go in Ohio?
It went really, really well. It's great to get out and see sellers. There were about 40 sellers in attendance. And in fact, one of the things they actually talked about was episode one of the Valerie Yee and Ashley Mulder podcast. So there were some listeners.
What did they say?
There was a little bit of debate around the title and leveraging the title. And then what came up was a suggestion. You remember back in the day, there was the perfect listing video that was created by Harry when he was here in product. And there was a desire to have kind of something that specific done again and updated. Okay. And then, of course, I got the question of, just tell me how to get my listing to the top. What's the algorithm?
Well, first, you got to hand Brian a check for $10,000.
And I still wouldn't be able to answer the question. I've talked to those guys that do that algorithm, and I still don't understand it. Except for the basics.
So I've shown sellers how they can very quickly get their item to the top. You know how you do it? You copy and paste your title and then put that into the search bar. And I guarantee you that your item will be the top item and possibly the only item. But I always use that as an example of how there's no way you can guarantee you're going to be on the top slot because you don't know what buyers are using to search and you don't know what other sellers are putting in their title. It would be unrealistic to do that. So what you need to do is just follow the best practices and your chances of appearing on that first fold increase every time that you make your listing more perfect. But no, this idea that you want to be king of the hill and top, my suggestion is to go into a field like wrestling or some other competitive sport and get to the top that way. You're not going to do it on eBay. It's impossible.
Yeah, you can try though.
So I'm sorry I missed it. It sounded like there were some great discussions.
Michael Swope, who is the host for the seller meeting in Akron, does a wonderful job. I mean, he provided pizza for everyone and soft drinks and really, really tasty brownies. Sorry, I had to. And then there was a really good discussion around things, you know, promoted listings came up as a topic as well. They were really excited about eBay international shipping, especially the component where eBay takes care of the returns. Michael basically describes it as, it's like GSP, but better.
It's a very good way to put it.
A really good discussion around a number of topics. And then in Ohio, there's some legislation that was recently passed around auctioneer licenses, and there were questions around that. And Michael's well-connected, and he actually had one of the state representatives who was the author of the bill dial in and speak to the sellers about the intent of it. And the wording does make it sound like it applies to eBay sellers, but he said that's not the intent of the bill. I'm not a legal expert, so if you're in Ohio, you know, please consult a lawyer if you're concerned about that bill impacting you. But it was a really, really good meeting. A lot of good topics and some new sellers who have been only selling for a couple of years or less than a couple of years. And then one gentleman who was there because he has a business and he was there because he wants to like start to sell on eBay.
There's always those new sellers coming in. Well, Brian, I'm glad there's someone on our team who's making it a priority to attend these seller events outside of just the Bay Area. So thank you for doing that.
Well, it's a pleasure. You know me, I love that part of my job, like connecting with our sellers. Enough about my trip to Akron. Let's get to part two of our series on busting listing myths.
Welcome back to part two in our series of debunking listing myths. We're back with Ashley Mulder and Valerie Yee. She's seller experience and product and technology chief of staff. Ashley Mulder has been a seller on eBay for quite some time. She's well known among many sellers. It's Millennial Mouse. Welcome back, Valerie and Ashley. When we left off at the end of part one, we were talking about item specifics. It's time to move on to product photos because this is yet another part of the listing process where I've heard so many different opinions and they seem sometimes to be contradictory. Valerie, what's eBay's suggestions when it comes to putting photos on a listing?
I like to say, think like a buyer. And buyers like photos. Honestly, when I'm trying to buy on eBay and I see two photos or one, God forbid, like I kind of move on. I'm like, you know what? I actually trust that seller a lot less because I want to see all the angles and how it looks back, side, front. So my mantra is I take pictures as if there's no description and I write the description as if there's no pictures. We do have users who are visually impaired, so keep that in mind as well, you know, in terms of when you write and take pictures of things. And we all know many sellers say buyers don't read, so use more pictures. And if you weren't aware, you can now use up to 24 pictures at no additional cost.
So we doubled the 12 limit to 24.
Correct.
It's a big jump.
Have you noticed that, Ashley? Have you been using it more?
I wouldn't say I've been using more photos just because the option is there. It's just I have to cut out less, or there would be some times where it would be a rare case where if I had like maybe a vintage item that was like heavily flawed or something like that, that I had to take a lot of photos of, I'd have to like make a collage of the tags or something like that to make it into one photo to get it down to the 12 where now I don't have to worry about that. I can just upload them all.
There are going to be cases where you won't need 12 pictures, and there will be some cases where it'd be really advantageous to have more than 12. It's a seller option, seller decision, but now you have a choice in case you need more photos. I can think of a few times, some of the stuff I sell doesn't need many photos. If I sell a box of brand new cologne, I take a picture of the front, the back, maybe four photos at most, right?
And exactly. And that's fine. And so again, think like a buyer, right? Please, please don't duplicate the same four pictures three times to get, you know, 15. So I've seen sellers doing that and you're like, oh, please don't do that either. Because as a buyer, you're like, didn't I see that one already? So
yeah.
Am I looking for something different in this one? Is there a flaw they're trying to show me?
What's the difference here? Can you pick out the difference? Yeah.
Yeah. Find 10 differences between these two images. Yeah, exactly. Don't duplicate the same images, please. But Griff is right. If four is enough, four is enough. So again, I go back to think like a buyer. If you were a buyer and you were showing someone this listing, would you buy it or not?
Yeah. And I think another thing that often gets left off too is most people will include brand tags and size tags for clothing. But a lot of times what gets left off is material tags and care tags. A lot of times I'll get questions, is this dry clean only, or is it, you know, machine washable, stuff like that. If I had to take a picture of brand tag, they don't need to ask me that. Or the care tag, sorry. They don't need to ask me that. They can just look the care tag right there.
That's a good idea.
Although I once took a picture of a care tag and it was using all of the EU symbols. And somebody said, what does all this mean? So I realized I can't just rely on the care tag. Sometimes I have to say, this means you can wash it. This means you can put it in the dryer, because they use all those symbols now.
I think another thing is too, is actually pointing out the flaws in the photos instead of just taking a picture of the flaw and expecting them to find it in the photo. So whether it be using something to point to it, whether it be marking it up and putting a circle around it, something like that, because you can't expect everyone just to automatically find it in the photo.
I try to use like a pencil or something to point at it. Or sometimes I'll use a ruler to show how big it is, right? Because that may matter of if that stain's going to be a quarter of an inch or an inch. Like scale sometimes helps as well.
Yeah, I use the markup tool on the iPhone a lot. So I just like do a circle. If you draw a circle with your hand, hold down, it automatically makes a circle and you're done.
I know that a couple of years ago, if you didn't do a certain thing when you were setting up your photo, it would not show up in Google Shopping. Valerie, can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, backgrounds, the background debate, right? Everyone, you know, want to stand out. And the guidance before was, you know, I know you want to use your fancy backgrounds and the wood grain backdrop. And we used to say, Google won't accept this. And they've changed their ways. So, you know, they now accept these backgrounds. You can use them if you want, but I still say think like a buyer. I prefer the white background because when I'm looking, if you look at a gallery view of search results, the ones with the white background actually shows you what you're getting, right? When you've got stuff in the background, it can be confusing and it's a little harder to scan. I feel like when Ashley was talking earlier about women's having the title women's or the word women's, like she kind of, her brain skipped over it. So I find when I'm buying things, that white background just makes it look more professional, makes it look like it's, oh, this is going to be, the seller takes good care and, you know, takes good pictures. And I just feel like the white background is still my preferred method.
Yeah, I'm glad we can clear that up. There are a few things that Google has changed and we've talked about in past episodes, but that's one that's important to keep in mind. But I don't think it's a call for a free-for-all and just make your listings look really busy. It is really nice to have just a simple white background and it looks cleaner and your item is going to stand out more. I can think of a seller right now, and I no names mentioned, obviously, but they sell really beautiful things and they tend to be dark. The finish is dark, and he sells them on a black background. So they're very dramatic and almost impossible to really see. And I know the person who's doing this thinks these are beautiful photographs. And I think in a magazine spread, they would be. But on eBay, he's doing himself a big disservice.
Ashley, what do you see from your seller friends? What do you use for your backgrounds?
I use white backgrounds 99.9% of the time. There is that 0.1% of the time I don't. And that is for hot items that are in demand that I feel like you need to, quote unquote, prove you have in hand. I will a lot of times take the picture without a white background, and or sometimes what I'll do is I'll make sure my hand is in the photo or something where you see me holding it or, you know, something of that nature. It happens a lot around Christmas time if you're looking for specific Funko Pop drops, Squishmallows, stuff like that. I feel like a lot of times with those particular listings, if they see a stock photo or a pure white background photo, they're not going to think that you actually have it in hand. Because there's times where I've bought things from sellers that they said in the title they had in hand, and all of a sudden, miraculously, they no longer have it anymore and they can't ship it. Well, it's because you never had it in hand. And I know that now.
So you're thinking like a buyer.
Exactly. So that is the small fraction of time I do not use a white background. Everything else I do use a white background for. And I do it for all my photos. I know you only have to do it for the first photo, but because of how my workflow process is and everything like that, it's just easier for me to do it for all my photos.
In an upcoming segment, probably in a couple months from now, we're arranging to do a whole show around how to take the best photos. And it's a little bit of a challenge for us, obviously. It's a podcast and we don't have much of a visual component, but we're working on that as something that people can view and listen to and hopefully get some information about how, you know, how to set up a light, how to set up a background, how to crop a photo, whether it needs editing, how to make it look good. You can look forward to that in the next couple months. Let's move on to another aspect. And again, this one is, I've seen 26 years of debates on which ones to use, and that's pricing and format. Valerie, auction, buy it now, start at a high price, start at a low price, best offer, all these different things, reserve price. What's your take?
We know pricing is a touchy subject. So clearly, you know, we don't know your margins. You are all in control of your business, of what you want to charge for your inventory. So let's state that up front. We're not here to say you must price it at this price. Auction, I wouldn't use auction for commodity items. So this is better when you really, truly don't know the market price or it's something that's hot that's going on. For example, I always say like no one wants to wait 5 days for a puzzle. For the auction to end. You know, they found a really cool puzzle, but I don't want to wait 5 days for that to end. So, I mean, like, think about, again, think like the buyer. I'm going to be like a broken record here. And it's, you know, sometimes if it's a commodity item, best is you buy it now. The other big debate is about reserve price. My tip is just don't use it, honestly. Price the item at the price you're willing to sell it for. And it's very common for new sellers to get burned by the fact that this is an insertion fee. And not a final value fee. So you get charged that reserve fee when you list it. So if you do a reserve fee for a super high price and you actually, your auction never makes it to that cost and you don't sell it, you still get charged that fee. And so that can be super frustrating for the seller. And also buyers prefer transparency. I mean, they want to know, what are you willing to sell this for? So I think it's just, I stay away from reserve prices, honestly. Do you ever use auction, Ashley, for your stuff?
I don't typically. I did test it before with trying to like clear out old inventory and stuff like that, but I have a new strategy for that. So I don't use auctions. My husband does sometimes and he has a sports cards store. So he'll use it for sports cards and stuff like that, which I feel like is more of the culture of auctions in sports cards and stuff like that is there. That's common. That's a whole different, you know, side of things. Generally, I do not do auctions, not even on hot items. I price it at the item I want. If it sells for that price, great. If not, because I have zero patience, I will not wait for that auction to end. I automatically go in and say, I only want to see buy it now listings because I'm not waiting for that auction to end. When I want it, I want it now.
It would have to be pretty rare of an item for me. I'll consider putting a bid in. Otherwise, whenever I'm searching, I tend to shut the auction side of it off so I just see the buy it now.
And I think also, too, nowadays with a lot of live selling and live auctions, some of them only last 15 seconds. That is a lot more satisfying than waiting 7 days.
That's different.
Yeah.
And you'll see more of that in the future, I'm sure. When we're talking about pricing, I've always said research sold items. Now we have a lot more options for tools. Ashley, do you use other pricing research tools when you're figuring out what to price your items?
Besides my own comps, I live and breathe Terapi. So I go in, I take whatever I feel like a buyer would typically search for on eBay, put that in, I go to the last 6 months, and I look at the average sold price. Typically, I will price my item right at that. I sell a lot of everyday items. If I notice a wide range where one sold for like maybe a dollar, another sold for like $1,000, I might go in and investigate a little bit more and be like, why is one so much higher than the other? And a lot of times I found out that I've had some pretty rare items that way that I was unknowingly had that was not expecting to be a rare item. End up selling for like $100. 9 times out of 10, though, I just go in, I look at the average sold price. I price my item at the average sold price for the past 6 months, call it a day. To use my own comps, because I have my own sort of database, so I will look at what I've sold things at before, if it's a standardized item that I sell a lot. But yeah, that's all I use is Terapeak.
It's a great tool.
We know it's so great that we've now started putting that data within the listing tool itself. We're trying to put the data where you are as sellers. So for example, it's in the listing tool itself, and it's also on the Seller Hub active listings page. You can see right then and there, like, what is the going price? And then also within the Terapeak tool itself on its own, the research tab within Seller Hub. But the cool thing is, you know, you can now see, at least with Terapeak, and you go into it, it's like you can go back a year, which is much better than the sold listings, which is only 90 days.
I think it's 2 years now. It's 2 years now, isn't it?
I'm so glad Ashley's here.
It's a very recent change, but I noticed the pop-up come up. That's why I remember it. And also the other thing is too, in Terapeak, if someone accepted a best offer, you could actually see what that offer was.
I know.
Instead of just seeing the strike-through price.
All those people that go to sold search and they see that strike-through price, they're like, what did it sell for? Well, guess what? Terapeak will tell you.
When it comes to listing myths that we want to debunk and listing practices we want to see more of, let's talk about one that also is highly debated, and that's shipping. Whether you're going to charge for shipping, whether you give free shipping or something in between. Valerie, what's your take on shipping?
First of all, shipping's expensive. Man, I sold something this morning and it cost me $4 and it's only 7 ounces. It only went to LA, so it didn't even go that far. So I think the world does not understand how much shipping is. I'm just saying, like, that's sort of my opinion, but it's just, I think it's, to me, it's really eating into all of our margins for sure. And so I like to say, especially, you know, for a lot of sellers out there, if you're new, buy a scale. Like, you have to buy a scale. Please don't guess how much it weighs. You will be wrong. I guarantee you have no idea how much cardboard weighs. You have no idea how much packaging weighs. Like, people just weigh the item they sold and they're like, oh, that's what the item weighs. I'm like, yeah, put it in a box and put some packaging around it and you've just doubled the weight of this thing and didn't even realize it. My huge tip is to A, buy a scale, and B, use calculated shipping if you're a new seller while you get your feet wet. And so while you get your feet wet, use calculated shipping. That way you can't get burned on shipping for sure, right? That means the buyer is going to pay what it costs, especially because we live on a coast. I live in California. Shipping to LA versus shipping to New York is very different cost. Calculated shipping can save you on that one. So that's sort of my thing.
I have an opposite opinion on that. I think you should charge shipping, but I don't think you should do calculated as a new seller because a lot of times your items are not going to be weighed first when you start listing. You're not going to know what it weighs. That calculated price is not going to come through correctly because it might be pulling off 1 ounce. It might be pulling off a pound and it could be a t-shirt. I use a guideline of, I have lots of shipping policies. My two primary ones are my first class one. I charge a flat $5.35 always for my first class shipping. If it's under a pound, I charge $5.35. If it is more than a pound and it's a clothing item that's not super bulky, I charge $8.99, which is padded flat rate, which it costs me like $8.30. I think a lot of sellers that come on eBay don't come on eBay right away. They're not starting on eBay. A lot of times they're starting from other platforms. Almost every other platform, you don't have to pre-weigh your items necessarily. Their items are not going to be pre-weighed. So knowing kind of what classes they fall into, and I did a whole post on Instagram about this, of what items typically fall into which category of that padded flat rate versus first class, and kind of use that as a guideline until you've gotten to the habit of pre-weighing your items, and then maybe you can transition to a calculated shipping. I do calculated shipping for heavy, bulky priority items that do not fit into a padded flat rate, and I make sure to give them three options. USPS Parcel Select, I think it's called now, Priority, or UPS Ground. They can choose any one of those three, but I've never been an advocate for free shipping. I hate free shipping.
Yeah, I used to use it, but I don't use it anymore either.
Because it's not free.
Someone still has to pay for it. I think the funniest one time, a buyer emailed me and said, there's no way it costs $7.99. This is when I was still charging $7.99 for padded flat rate before the price. It was actually right when the price hike went up, and I had not changed my policies yet. And he was like, there's no way it costs $7.99 to ship a pair of jeans. I was like, excuse me, it cost me $8.30, actually. Thank you. I just haven't updated my policies. Thank you for reminding me, by the way. I don't think you should do free shipping as a new seller, but I also calculate it'd be very hard as a new seller, I think. Knowing kind of a flat rate category, I think, is good to start out at.
Unless you happen to have a scale. If you have a scale.
That's why I said start with a scale.
Well, yeah, you're going to have a scale regardless, because you're going to have to weigh it before you ship it anyway. But what I'm saying is, if you already have existing listings on another platform that you're going to be bringing over, that stuff's not going to be waiting. You're not going to pull that stuff out of your inventory to weigh it just to list it.
That's true.
Especially if, like, I know for me, my inventory is pre-bagged. There are people that may not pre-bag, but it might not be at their home. It could be at a storage unit or something like that. They're not going to go through and weigh all of them after the fact. I pre-weigh all my items now, but I still stick with my flat rate policy. But I could easily transition to a calculator if I wanted to, because I do pre-weigh now. But starting out, I mean, I had to move over something like 500 listings and none of them were pre-weighed. I had to figure out a way to make it work. And so that was kind of the standard that I came up with.
No, it's true. And I guess in my mind, I was thinking true new sellers, like never listed before. So it's, if you know, you don't have that inventory somewhere else, you're trying to pull over. But yeah, no, that's a good point, is that you're right. It's all put away, packed away in the box. You're like, I'm not pulling that out and weighing that. I hear you there.
And a lot of true new sellers are too scared to start on eBay right away. Not going to lie. They are. They're intimidated by it. So they're going to start with a platform. That's another platform. I won't name names. That they see as easier. That they see as easier because of the shipping. It comes down to it, because of the shipping.
Yeah, shipping is always the most, everyone is very afraid of shipping. Definitely try flat rate boxes, flat rate envelopes, get your feet wet, right? So like start with small items. Nothing's worse than, my brother brought me over a hockey stick to sell. And I'm like, I'm a pretty seasoned seller, but I looked at that thing and went, how in the heck do I ship that, right? I mean, it's just, well, don't start with a hockey stick, I guess, is really, you know, it's start small, get your feet wet, figure it out. And you might make some mistakes along the way. It's okay. Don't beat yourself up. It is super complicated. It feels that way, right? Because there's different ways to ship and it's just one of those things. But you know, I'm going to touch on the free shipping thing. So Ashley's like, I never use free shipping. And my guidance on that one is, if you're willing to play in the waters, test it out. And a lot of buyers will use the filter in search that says free shipping. Now, here's the crazy thing. Some of those things says now the inventory is filtered out. So now, Ashley, your inventory is gone from that search result. People actually may be charging more than you, and the buyers don't even see your listing. It's kind of crazy to think about. I know, she's like, I know, but I'm not doing it. And that's fine. You don't have to do it. But I'm just calling it out as maybe like that test thing, right? So
yeah,
there are some sellers that test it out. They put some things with free shipping that actually, you know, maybe is more than their other listing. And, you know, you may lose out on visibility from buyers. That's all. But I mean, I go back and forth on the free shipping thing. I've done both.
Yeah, I hardly ever use it.
Yeah, I shouldn't say that I never use free shipping. I do use it occasionally. There are a handful of categories I'll use it on. For me, it's like plush, bras. I don't know why. Bras, for some reason, I just defaulted to free shipping. And like the hot items, like we were talking about before, I will do it. But I'll do one of two things. I either will not accept best offer on those items, or I will accept best offer with an auto decline of a price where I know that I will still be able to pay for shipping and still make money. I'll do one of those two things. Typically, if it's like a bra or something like that, I just don't accept best offers on it. And that's typically because I'm pretty confident on my pricing on those. If I'm not really confident on the pricing, I just set up an auto decline and make sure that I can still pay to ship it.
So I'll go back to the Terapeak comment too. So Terapeak will tell you what percentage of that inventory is offering free shipping. I use that data point as well, because if it's like 90% free shipping in that category, I'm like, yeah, I probably should do free shipping. And I just build it into my cost. So the item I sold this morning was free shipping, even though it cost me $4. But, you know, I built it into my cost.
Recently just started with very specific items, usually weigh less than 10 ounces, and I'll have a multi-quantity of them. I've kind of worked out all the variations of what I'm going to make on them if they, you know, when I'm using volume pricing. And in order to just do a little cover, I'll use I created a new shipping policy, flat rate $1, and it just says standard shipping. So I'll choose what the shipping method is. And I find that's working for me. That little $1 cushion, it looks great to a buyer. They say, it's only a dollar to ship. That's great. That little cushion helps me make those decisions and not have to outlay money for shipping based on, you know, the cost. Some items, I'm sure, Ashley, you find this, that the item is, it has a specific value. And if you go too far over it, trying to put the shipping cost into it, now you put yourself out of competition, even though, you know, you're saying it's free shipping. But if you add a little bit of shipping cost in a flat rate situation, it all kind of comes out in the wash when you've sold them all.
And that's kind of my theory with the whole the first class policy. So I, like I said, I charge $535. Do I sometimes pay more than $535? Yeah, I do. Do I sometimes pay less than $535? Yeah, I do. It's a wash.
It's a wash, exactly.
I've just found that that is a good price point that I found where it balances.
Yeah, if I saw something that was $5 for shipping, I'd say, hey, it's a good deal too. I'm going to buy it. So, well, I want to thank you both. This has been a great series, and I've learned a lot, which is saying something because I think I know everything, which I obviously don't. So thank you so much, Ashley and Valerie, for coming on and talking about listing myths, some of which are real and some of which I hope we've debunked. And if you have a question about any of the content that we've provided for this series, give us a call at 888-723-4630, or you can email us at podcast@ebay.com, and I'll get answers to your questions, and we'll talk about it in future episodes. Ashley, Valerie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Valerie Yee is Seller Experience and Product and Technology Chief of Staff here at eBay. Ashley Mulder is an eBay seller. Her store is Millennial Mouse. We'll put a link to that store in the summary overview for these episodes.
You got questions?
We've got answers.
And our first question this week is from eBay seller Chris, who writes, "Hello, as discussed in the 2-7 or the February 7th podcast, I avoid punctuation and special characters when possible, but I sell vehicle parts and often need to put things like 1979 hyphen to 1986 or part number ABC123. Typing out each year for a part would be both confusing and use up too many characters. Ditto the part number ABC123. Yes, I also put years and part numbers in the relevant detail fields in compatibility. But I simply can't believe that Chevy Camaro Z28 speedometer is going to hit a buyer, as well as 1979 to 1986 Chevy Camaro Z28 speedometer part number ABC123. Your advice? Thanks, Chris." Thank you, Chris, for that. Well, you do have 85 spaces in a title, so our perennial advice is always use them wisely. Extraneous punctuation should be avoided at all times, as it serves absolutely no purpose and provides zero benefit.
Yeah, and that said, Chris, if your title has space for the make, model, part number, and part type, and you still even have some room for indicating the model years that the part will fit, then you're creating a really good title. So if you can fit it in and you can include 1979 to 1986 in your example title, it's perfectly okay. That's my advice. Maybe I'm missing something.
No, I think that's good advice. And Chris, if you're also filling out the compatibility item specifics to ensure your listing fits the right make and model by year, this is the recommended best practice.
I think that Chris, when he makes the comment about he can't believe that a buyer is going to get the impact, right? I think he's wrong. And I'll tell you why, Chris. Because you're filling out those compatibility data fields. When the buyer sees your title, if you don't have all the years, or you don't have the actual item part number, they know that the part is compatible because they've already checked the boxes when they did the search saying it has to be compatible with this. So I think you might be putting too much importance on those words showing up in the title. But if you have the room for them, go ahead, use them. Yeah.
But something like the hashtag for number, no buyer's going to search with that character. So it's probably not going to pull back anything, you know,
that's a
but
good
like
point.
1979 yeah, to 1986, someone might put in 79, but to your point, he's probably already put it in elsewhere where it's pulling it back.
Yeah, the compatibility data, he's already put it in. And believe me, buyers are filtering by that compatibility data, because if they don't, they get thousands, hundreds, if not thousands of irrelevant returned results.
Yeah.
So, Chris, that's the only advice that we have to give. Basically, if that title example you gave us is it fits in, I didn't count all the character spaces, you know, maybe lose the hashtag. But yeah, you're fine. You don't really need any advice from us. I think you know exactly how to create a great title, but...
Oh, no. There's a but.
Yes, there usually is a big but, Simone, but this one is a little but. So, but we want to take this opportunity to remind you and everyone else, for that matter, about the recently announced eBay Guaranteed Fit program for eBay Motors parts and accessories categories.
Chris, eBay Guaranteed Fit is a program designed to protect buyers and sellers from challenges associated with fitment issues. This program applies to eligible items in the eBay Motors parts and accessories category, including most parts and accessories for cars, trucks, and motorcycles.
That's right, and you can learn more, Chris, at eBay's Seller Center. There's a link on the main Seller Center page that will take you directly to the page for Guaranteed Fit Program. We'll put that link also in the links for this episode in our summary overview.
So keep up the good work, Chris. Your titles are actually top-notch.
Yes, they are. Our next question is from Liz, who sent the following to podcast@ebay.com. Hi, guys. I often get messages asking if I will accept an offer that includes shipping for an item listed with calculated shipping. Is there a way to do this? I currently offer to reduce the price to offset shipping, but I don't know what their calculated shipping rate is. I also have the option to refund the shipping after the purchase, but again, don't know what I'm offering as I don't know what their calculated shipping rate is, at least not before I print out the label. What are best practices for handling these requests? Thank you for your help, and I would love some swag. Liz, and I believe her user ID is Crosolio.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah, okay. Well, Liz, yeah, I get what you're trying to do here, Liz, but the best offer feature was intended as a tool for negotiating only the price of the item, and it was most definitely not intended to be a channel for a buyer to negotiate with the seller on the shipping price.
And that's why there's no support in the feature for negotiating shipping. When a buyer sees an offer, they know what shipping will cost based on what is shown to them in the listing. Providing an option for negotiating both item price and shipping cost would introduce a level of unnecessary complexity to the feature. So the buyer should focus on the item price alone and not ask for a shipping discount through best offer.
Yeah, and that said, buyers are still going to try it anyway. My advice is to decline the request of offer to adjust shipping and to tell the buyer that the best offer feature is for sending and accepting or countering offers based solely on the item price alone and not for negotiating shipping. They see the shipping. If they want a better deal, they can just put right in a lower offer. But you know, this idea of making a two-tiered system is never going to happen. And sellers don't need to agree to that request. And I actually think that sellers should always decline that request. Focus in on the price of the item, and if the shipping to you is $5, then make a $5 less offer on the item price. But
yeah,
if you're a buyer and you're listening, stop it. And if you're a seller and you get that, just decline it. That's my advice.
Sellers want to feel like they need to respond to that buyer from a customer service standpoint, or they want to make the sale or whatever. But I think to your point, don't feel obligated to respond. You don't have to. Just focus on the price.
Yeah.
Good guidance.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't do it as snarkily as I did it just now. I would probably say, gee, no, I can't do that. But you can always offer a lower price. But I don't negotiate on shipping.
Leave it
and,
at that.
Leave it at that. Exactly.
Our next question was sent to podcast@ebay.com by seller Klaus, who writes, Dear Griffin Bryan, I've got questions. I hope you have answers. I already like this question.
Of course
eBay
you do.
Store, Whiskey Tango Trading Post. I have a question regarding scheduling listings on my store. Prior to opening my store, I used to schedule 3 to 5 listings per day and have them go live throughout the week. There was no cost associated with this practice. However, since I upgraded to the paid basic store option, I have noticed a fee of 10 cents when I try to follow the same workflow. Could you shed some light on why this might be happening? Thank you for your valuable contributions to the podcast and the wealth of knowledge you provide. I would also be delighted to receive a coffee mug if you have any available. Best regards, Klaus.
I think we still have a few available. So Klaus, up until February 15th, scheduled listings and auction with Buy It Now were only free for non-store subscribers. And if you were a store seller, you had to pay 10 cents per scheduled listing. Why? Who knows? Nickel and dime. That's why you saw a scheduled listing fee charged to you post opening your eBay store. However, there is good news. As announced in the recent seller update, scheduled listings and auction with Buy It Now are all free to all sellers, regardless if you have a store or not. And as we are now past
correct
February 15th, you probably already noticed this.
Hopefully he has, but if he hasn't, he can go to announcements@ebay.com. Yeah, go to
seller update
in community.ebay.com and go to the announcement section and you can read all about it.
Our last question this week is from seller Megan, who sent the following to podcast@ebay.com. Hi, guys. I'm already enrolled in the eBay International Shipping Program. I use business policies and went to make a new shipping policy, and when it asked about international shipping, it only gave three options: calculated flat rate and no international shipping. I chose no international shipping at this time as I only want to use EIS. What do I do? Thanks, Megan. P.S. And I don't know if everyone's going to get this reference. Still don't know what shoes one would use to do typing.
Yes.
Do you remember that? Typing shoes? In the category of shoes, there's actually an activity called typing. Well, Megan, for sellers like yourself who want to use only the eBay International Shipping Program for all of their international sales, they do need to check the No International box for the related shipping policy. I know this sounds wrong, but it's not.
It does sound wrong, but we assure you, Megan, you are doing it the right way by checking that box. Once a seller is in the eBay International Shipping Program, it is automatically the default international shipping option for any listing where the item meets export inclusion.
Yeah, that's right. So if your item is legal to sell to an international country, it automatically is handled by eBay International Shipping. You don't have to indicate it. But when you check the box for no international, it tells eBay you're not using another international service on your own. So keep on checking the box if you want to use eBay International Shipping instead of your own.
That's not very intuitive, is it?
I agree. It's confusing as hell. I asked the shipping team about this because, well, you know, that's I am one to do so. I do ask. It doesn't seem intuitive, and I said that to them, and they agreed, saying they are working on improving the experience when setting up a business policy to make it more intuitive in the future. And it should be, this change, be available sometime this year.
And there's a great page on eBay's Seller Center that provides all the details for eBay International Shipping.
Yeah, and alas, I tried to find it, and it's not easy. So if you go to Seller Center and you type in the search box on the top, International Shipping, it's the first return link right on the top.
And we'll put a link directly to the International Shipping page in the link section of episode 231.
Yeah, because, you know... It's an apparently getting there is an eBay podcast exclusive, so we're happy to do that. And note that next week, Megan and everyone, our topic is international shipping. We're going to actually have somebody on to talk about it. Well, Brian, that's all for this week.
Do you have questions about selling on eBay? Why not call it into us here at 888-723-4630?
Why not indeed? 888-723-4630. You can leave your question on the voice line, and we'll answer it in an upcoming episode.
And if you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email your question to us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And now it's weekly reminder time.
Check the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements for up-to-date seller news every day.
If you haven't yet been enrolled in the eBay International Shipping Program, you're about to. So I'm going to remind you, check the link in the transcript or the link that you get in the email so that you understand exactly how it works.
And if you need to review anything in this episode, it's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links we referenced during the episode.
On our next episode, episode 232, we'll meet with Chad Stewart from the eBay shipping team to talk about the details of the new eBay International Shipping Program.
We'd like to again thank our guests this week, Valerie Yee and Ashley Mulder.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.